Did I sound like I was reading? I felt like I was reading because I was.
Do you want another go?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Take two. No.
Yeah.
No, it's totally fine.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
I'm Emily.
And this is Misconceptions, a podcast about two gals who understand the painful, emotional, sometimes absurd, and often lonely experiences of infertility.
Join us as we relive our own stories and welcome the many others willing to share their adventures. Okay, so this episode is going to be affectionately called Strawberry Jelly. Mm-hmm. And I was going to just start with my fourth pregnancy and just talk about my fourth pregnancy, but I didn't just like show up at a fourth pregnancy. Like I had to get mm-hmm. there somehow. So I thought I would quickly tell the story. But I feel like I need to do some disclaimers. Like the first disclaimer is this episode is like really heavily about miscarriage and loss, and like I'm gonna kind of go into some explicit details about miscarriage, so if you're not ready for that, totally understandable. Skip this episode. And then I think the other disclaimer is less of a disclaimer, but my story does not end with children, and I think I want that to be okay. Like, I want that to be kind of normal, because I think for a lot of people, it doesn't end in children, whether it's like because they just can't find the way, or they're waiting to adopt, or, you know, they're kind of stuck in a pattern of trying, or whatever, and whatever it is for them. But for me, it was like, it was a choice. I think that's kind of like a niche part of infertility that isn't talked about a lot, like the walking away from it and the being done with it.
Yeah, and being okay.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. I definitely get that, because there probably was a point in your adventure, what are we saying, journey, in your in that terrible time that you thought, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to exhaust every option. Like, there's still these doors that I can go through.
Yeah.
But to just know when you were done.
Yeah.
And you had exhausted your options.
Yeah, and I think we can talk about this some other...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some other adventure, but...
Yeah.
You can walk away. And I think I talk about a wall, like hitting a wall. And mm-hmm. it's weird, because the wall is different for everyone. Like my personal wall was different than Asher's wall, was different than my mom's wall, right? My doctor's wall was different. Like you know, so you have to figure out whose walls are important and whose walls you're going to honor.
Yeah.
And it should absolutely be yours first, your own personal wall.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So my husband and I had just decided to stop preventing pregnancy in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I got pregnant right away. Like, I think it was two cycles later.
Wow.
And it was so exciting and terrifying. I'm pretty sure my husband was like, oh my God, that happened like way faster than I thought it would. and so, but it was exciting. And I think I just was so excited. I was finishing up my first year as a high school counselor, and it was the spring and everything. It was just like, of course, it's going to work out. We have this cute baby. We have a 400 square foot apartment in Portland. Like, we're probably going to need to move or not, whatever. And then I started spotting like 2 weeks after I found out I was pregnant, and I had never been pregnant. So I didn't know what that meant. Like, what is that normal? Is that healthy? So I called the doctor, and, you know, they're kind of like, we have to wait and see. It could be completely normal women spot during pregnancy, or it could be something. So just wait. And this was like the beginning of years of waiting, waiting for test results, like waiting for doctors to call, waiting for just so much waiting. Money and waiting is what infertility is, right? So the spotting ended, and like 2 more weeks went by, and I was in a conference with parents, and I had this like horrible pain in my side, and I really thought it was gas. Like, I was just like, what did I have for lunch? Like, so, you know, something's like upsetting my body.
Yeah. And you hear that pregnancy is always about gas. Oh, it's probably just gas. Right?
Totally.
Chalk it up to that. So, yeah.
Right. And so, not knowing anything, I'm like, oh, I'm just uncomfortable. I need to move around. And then it was like the most horrific pain and pressure. And then it was over. And I was like, okay, maybe, I don't know. And then you start to like try to reason your way out of it being something catastrophic, right? You're like, well, it probably was gas and now it's gone. Mm-hmm. And so I called, it was like 5 p.m. on a weeknight. The doctor's office was closed. So I called the hospital. And this nurse said, hey, it's probably nothing, but why don't you come in to the ER? Because we'll just get you checked out. And I was like, okay, no problem. So I'm in a little bit of pain, but I'm like 40 minutes from my husband. So I call him and I'm like, hey, I'm going to drive our one car to come get you. I stopped for gas on the way home, which I will never forget. I was like slung low in my seat, like stopping for gas. But in Oregon, you don't pump your own gas. So I didn't have to like get out of the car or anything.
Yeah.
I pick my husband up and we go to the hospital and we wait for like 6 hours. And I almost convince him to leave the hospital because I'm fine. No spotting, no pain. I'm totally fine. It was probably gas. But it turns out that I get seen and they're like, oh, you know, you are pregnant. So we need to do, we just need to do some testing. And I think, I can't ever remember this part, but basically they determined I was having an ectopic pregnancy, that the embryo was not in my uterus. So they didn't know where it was, but I needed an ultrasound. So I go get an ultrasound. It is like the most painful ultrasound. It's transvaginal. So it's just like inside. She's like looking for something in the dark with a flashlight. That's how I felt. Like, it was cold in there. It was midnight. Like, the room was just like, the hospital is isolated. And she's looking and she takes forever, minutes and minutes and minutes with no talking, because they're not going to tell me. Like, that's not their job.
Right.
So they send me back down to wait for the results, and then the doctors start to come in. And I'm pretty sure at least 2 of the doctors are pregnant. And I'm like,
they always are.
They always are. And, you know, I'm still thinking that it was probably gas and they're going to tell me I'm having twins or something. You know, I'm still like pretty sure. And they're like, okay, so it is ectopic. It's not in your uterus. It should be in your uterus. But it's okay because we're going to give you this medication and then you can go home and at least you're not having surgery. At least. And then I think some more test results come in and they're like, okay, well, you do need to have surgery, but we're going to, you know, at least we'll be able to keep the fallopian tube. And I'm like, okay, great. It's like 2 a.m. We're fairly new to Portland, so we don't really know anyone. My husband's like sitting by himself waiting for me to come out of surgery. I come out of surgery and I think I woke up and said, like, did you save my tube? And they were like, no, it had been completely blown out. Like, I had been in, like, an epic blowout way. I think, like, an eighth of my blood was pooling in my abdomen. And I think I stayed. I think I remember. I think we were discharged at, like, 9 in the morning. And I was like, this better not be considered an overnight stay, because I think I got into my room at, like, 4 in the morning.
So I'm just you're always, like, considering insurance charges. Yeah. And yeah.
Well, this better not count as an overnight stay.
Yeah.
At least it wasn't an overnight stay.
Right. So,
yeah. So, okay. So, you know, and then I go home and I'm not pregnant anymore. I'm down a fallopian tube. Like, all of a sudden, everything looks so different with fertility. Like, I got so easily pregnant. And then now it's like, what do you do? You have one fallopian tube, and I, you know, it was devastating and it was scary. And I think it was scarier for my husband because he was awake for all of it. I was, yeah. You know, I was under, yeah. So, that was baby number one. And we just kind of stared at each other like, oh my God, what was that? So then a year later, I get pregnant naturally, and we can't be seen till like week 10 or whatever. So I go in and they're like, oh my gosh, yay, let's do an ultrasound. They put the jelly on my stomach. They're like moving the wand. And then they're like, oh, I think you probably miscounted your weeks. So you're not as pregnant as you think you are. And I'm like, listen, I just missed a period. Took a test. It was positive. I don't know. I'm kind of new at this still.
Yeah.
And basically the doctor says, so we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But either you miscounted your weeks or this baby's not going to make it. So let's wait 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Oh.
So,
I'm so like, either you've made a mistake,
mm-hmm.
yeah. like putting it on you. That's just, yeah. That's wild.
I know. Yeah.
Okay.
So we wait 2 weeks and then I go back in and baby is gone. Like there is no embryo, but like none of the lining of my uterus has shed. So they say, you need to take misoprostol. You need to go home and take misoprostol. And you're going to start having a miscarriage at home. Which just, you know, we talked about this in the last episode. It's just so painful to think about, like, having to do that on your own. But I did it. I'm compliant. I'm, like, not, I don't, you know, I want people to like me. So yeah. I'm like, okay, great. So I go home, take the drugs. Nothing happens. I'm not miscarrying. I'm not nothing. It's like my body really wants to be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So like 4 days go by and nothing has happened. So I call the doctor and I'm like sobbing and I'm like, this needs to be done. It needs to be done. So she totally understands. She takes me, we go in that week and I have this like really cozy DNC. Like
mine was cozy too.
So cozy.
Like
dreamy.
Every
dreamy.
Procedure should be like that.
It totally like, should.
You forget why you're there, kind of. And yeah. They're making you feel better.
Yeah. I think that they asked if we wanted any music in the room.
Oh.
And at the time, like Taylor Swift's Red album had come out and I was like loving her album. And one of my favorite songs was Bad Blood. And I was like, let's maybe not play Bad Blood while I'm getting my DNC. I mean, we could, but why?
Yeah.
So that was so, it was so sad. And it was just like, okay, this is not going to be as easy as we maybe thought it was going to be. And then the doctor said, this is very common, you know. I think she potentially said, at least you can get, we know you can get pregnant. Come on. Yeah. So I can't remember the timeline anymore, but then I think a year goes by and I miss my period and I take a test and it's positive. But I've started to listen to my body. Like, I really started to tune in to what was going on, and I started to understand the gas bubbles and the twinges and the stuff that you talked about in the last episode. And I knew in my gut this was not something was wrong, because I could really, I was like acutely aware of my right side. And I don't know a whole lot about the uterus, but I'm pretty sure it's centered. And
yeah,
I shouldn't be having like side pain with a pregnancy, probably. So it's Halloween, of course, because it's never like 9 to 5. And it's Halloween evening. And I'm so panicked because I think I don't want my other fallopian tube to explode. Like, I just don't want to do that again. So we like leave the candy on the porch, back out of our driveway, potentially almost hit a trick-or-treater or two, like all the way to the hospital. And, you know, the ER is kind of a hot mess on Halloween. There's a lot going down. But I get seen by this doctor who is totally an ER doctor. There's nothing fertility about him. He's just like a run-of-the-mill bro.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't really care.
Problem solver. Yeah. But yeah, is it doesn't care about your future.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, right. And I said, you know, I'm pregnant and I'm concerned with my history that this is another ectopic pregnancy. And so he takes the blood and they run my numbers and he's like, yes, how pregnant do you think you are? And I said, I think I'm probably like 7, 8 weeks pregnant, missed a period a month ago. And he's like, yeah, your numbers, that like blood count, or I can't even remember anymore.
HSG. And
yes.
Right? Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
HCG. HCG. And then there was one other one that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we're going to learn a lot. Again.
Okay, but this is trauma brain, right? Like, you can't remember those details.
And totally.
Side note, like, I remember talking to this woman who had done IVF, like, 8 years ago at the time that I was talking to her. And she couldn't remember anything. And I was like, You have to be kidding me. This is so traumatic. Like, how can you not remember anything? And now I'm that far away from it. And I'm like, what are those letters? Like, what? Oh. It just is so true.
I had to write down, I had to look at my calendar and write down the months and the years that these things happened when we were talking on the last episode to prepare myself. Because I was like, I'm going to guess wrong within 5 years when this happened, because it's erased. It's, and you know, sometimes it's really nice that your brain does that for you, but sometimes you like need to know, like when a doctor's asking you questions and you're like, if that was a while ago.
Yeah.
I don't know, check news. My chart, I don't know.
Yes, right. Yes. Why is this always on me? The ER doctor was like, well, your HCG is low for as pregnant as you think you are, which is usually an indication of an ectopic pregnancy, but not always. And I said, well, I think I need a DNC. And he's like, and he, I will never forget this, he didn't want to do it. And he's like, now you know, Emily, that would end a healthy pregnancy if the pregnancy is, in fact, in your uterus. And I remember thinking, I surely cannot know more than this ER doctor about, like, what's happening. But I feel that I do know more than this ER doctor. So I said, I don't care. I need you to do it. And so by then, I think this, like, super dreamy doctor comes in. He's like, he is part of the fertility cohort.
Yeah.
He does a completely unmedicated DNC. Like, I'm pretty sure they gave me the drugs and gave me like 3 minutes and then started the procedure in the ER.
Oh my God.
It felt like I was being punished for choosing this option. And I'm crying from the pain. And this nurse is like petting my head, like heavy petting my head, yeah. And saying, shh, this is not your fault. And I'm like, I know that. But also, like, they're digging into my uterus. They're, like, clawing their way through my uterus.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And so they went through all of the tissue, did not find a baby. So then they were like, okay, it's ectopic. And I was like, no shit. Thank you. And so I had to start on a chemo drug that stops cell division. So they like give you this injection in your like upper thigh that it's methotrexate, which you would take for cancer.
Yeah.
And it just stops cell reproduction. So it stops these cells from growing wherever they are in your body. And it didn't work. So I take the drug, I go home, and I'm supposed to be monitored. And my numbers are, like, not falling like they should be. Like, that it should be ending the pregnancy. And it's, like, the levels are level. And I can't seem to get them down. So they're worried because they're like, we got to find this thing and take care of this thing. What is happening? So then I needed, on a Saturday, of course, because it's always a Saturday, yeah. I had to go in for another round of the chemo medication, and the regular office that I was in was closed, so I was on the delivery floor of the hospital.
No.
Yes. Luckily, it was quiet. Nobody was having a baby, but a delivery nurse is the one who, like, offered so kindly to give me the medication, and she's like, I don't usually do this part. But I'll do, you know, I want to take care of you. And she was fabulous. I'm so thankful for her.
Good.
But I just was like, am I really on the, really? Like, I'm on the delivery floor of this hospital. Could yeah. it be anywhere else? Could she have come down the elevator and done it in the ER?
Yeah.
No. And so then Asher and I just had to go, we had to go to the hospital every Saturday for 6 weeks and watch the levels drop. And it was, like, just so painstaking and frustrating and no closure. Like, it just didn't feel like I was going to be able to end this pregnancy. It was just, like, on and on and on. So then we had to have a conversation, right? Because I think the hospital was tired of seeing us. And I think it was becoming much more clear that we were not going to be able to do this on our own. So we saw a fertility specialist, and she called it our transportation problem. She's like, oh. So you don't have a pregnancy problem, but you're having trouble getting the pregnancy to the uterus. So I want to eliminate that for you. Like, I want to be the transporter. And
yeah,
and I appreciated that because I felt like she was right. Like, I kept getting pregnant. It just wasn't in the right place, or it wasn't sticking for some reason.
Right. Oh, and that's not dumbing it down for you. That's just like, that's giving you a sort of visual that, like, you can understand.
Right.
It's yeah, like I would be like, okay, that's exactly what's going on right now. And
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so I did the, I don't know what it's called, hysteriosalpingectomy or whatever that thing is.
Oh.
Where they just like make sure there's not like something weird going on with my fallopian tube.
HSG?
Yeah. No. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. I mean, that could be a food additive, or it's or it's that test. But yeah.
Wait a minute. Is it both?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Oh. And my one remaining fallopian tube was fine. You know, it was a little twisty. Mm-hmm. Just like a little corkscrewy, but it, whatever. But anyway, we're going to bypass it anyway. So I think they just wanted to make sure there wasn't something like hiding in there.
Was that the dye test though?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. And it wasn't also, I didn't feel like it was that painful, but I know some people have had a really hard time with that.
Yeah. And I did appreciate how they give you that warning.
Yeah.
Which, you know, got me probably more stressed out than I needed to about it, but it was nice when it was done. I was like, wow, you're really good at this. Then that didn't hurt too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think they talk to you about, like, if it is blocked, it is going to hurt. Like,
yeah.
Because you're just going to be filled up with dye. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. So I wanted to do IUIs because I wanted to do the least invasive first. Mm-hmm. And our fertility doctor was like, they're not going to work. And I didn't appreciate that. Like, I didn't. She was right, and I'm mad about it, but she was right. Like, she wanted to bypass my fallopian tube, do right into the uterus, and I just didn't want that yet, because there is so much that goes into it. And so, we did it. It didn't work. And I was just like, fine, let's do IVF.
After one IUI?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I am, like, high risk for ectopic pregnancy, and she's like, you're putting yourself in literal danger doing this. Mm-hmm.
And IUIs aren't solving the transportation problem.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
So that made sense.
Yeah.
So we did the egg retrieval. You know, they just like pump you with all the hormones. You feel disgusting. I remember crying at school. I was like sobbing, like liquid coming out of every hole in my face. And the head secretary was like, what's wrong? And I started laughing, probably like a maniac. And I was like, nothing, nothing, literally nothing is wrong. I just can't control my emotions right now because I am on every medication under the sun. I hated that. I think I might be a control freak. And so having no control over my body, you know, and I'm a blusher and I'm a crier. And then when I'm like on those hormones, it's like tenfold. And everybody's just like, what is happening to Emily Cabrera? She's like melting down, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, go ahead.
I think that you should be given some time off work when you're going through this, because no part of you is operating properly.
Right.
Like, you're not yourself. You're a vessel full of synthetic hormones, and you can't solve problems, and you can't make plans, and you can't fit your clothes, and it's, and you don't even know if it's going to be worth anything too. So it's like, why am I doing this to myself again? Like, yeah,
that's right. And I just remember somebody talking about rage. Like, she had never felt so much rage. And I'm not a rager. And so I was so worried that I was like, be a rager. But I was not.
Like, Asher, was that rage? Or like, I've been told.
Also, don't answer that. I will kill you. Yeah.
Because you've seen nothing.
Right. Oh, yes, marriage in the time of infertility.
yeah.
Oh, yeah, because we were doing, like, the progesterone shots in my butt and talk about, like, so sore. My butt was so sore from those and bruised, like, just so ugly. Yeah. So I did my egg retrieval, and, like, the only thing – I remember two things. They had the anesthesiologist in there. And he had to remind me to breathe. And he said, this drug makes you not breathe sometimes. So when you hear me say breathe, I need you to take a breath. And I remember him doing that. He'd be like, okay, take a breath. So I'm like, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
Gosh. And then I thought I had put my shoes on after the appointment. And Asher very kindly reminds me sometimes that he, in fact, put my shoes on. And it was like a whole ordeal. But I'm pretty sure I put them on. So I think it was me.
And you can remember it however you want.
That's right. He's like, oh, I think I put your shoes on for you. It's like, oh, okay. That's not how I remember it. So we hit the jackpot. We had like 40, some ridiculous, like 40.
Oh my gosh.
Eggs. And then I think it ended up with 10 embryos. Mm-hmm. And I love how they grade them like they're eggs you buy in the grocery store, right?
Yeah.
So I think we had 3 double A eggs. And part of me was like, I don't want those. I want the B. I want the C students, right? Like, I don't want the double A. They sound like a handful.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be too good at what they're doing. So we do the procedure, the IVF procedure. She puts the embryo in my uterus. And then I have never been so tired in my whole life. Like, we're driving home from the hospital. It's like a 20-minute drive. I cannot stay awake. And I think probably that little nugget was just settling into my uterus. And I remember that being such a peaceful time. Like, I just was like, okay, we did it. Woohoo! And then you wait, right? You wait 2 weeks to make sure it worked, which I'm terrible at waiting. I'm not very patient. No. So I was taking pregnancy tests like all the time. And it worked. I was pregnant and cautiously optimistic. I was so excited. So we go in for the first ultrasound and I can't remember, but I feel like she wanted to hear a heartbeat, but she didn't. And she's like, that's okay. It could be when you come back next Friday, we'll hear the heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So I go back the next Friday and there's a heartbeat and it's so exciting. It's like, oh, that's the heartbeat. But she wasn't happy with it. I was ecstatic. I was like, I've never heard a heartbeat on
a heartbeat's monitor. A heartbeat, right? Yeah. Yes. Like
what? Yeah. I don't know what like the beats per minute should be. Right. Yeah. So we go back, I think a third time and the heartbeat is like fading out. So it's very clear to all of us in the room that this is not a viable pregnancy. And she's like, well, you can come back next week if you want to. And I was like, why would I do that? Like, is there any chance that this baby's going to make it? And she said no. So then we all cried, doctor included, which until then, I hadn't really felt like she was warm. She was very good at what she did, but she was not like a warm person. But her tears were, I think they were comforting. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that they protect themselves a lot, you know? Like, you'd have to. You would have to.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
And they just want you to have a baby. Right?
Like, yeah.
They want you to have a baby. They want their numbers to have a baby, right? They want their success rate to be higher than not.
Yeah.
So she said, here's the deal. You need to go home and have a miscarriage. And I said, I'd really prefer a DNC. And she said, well, you know, nothing in infertility is without risk. So you have all these options, but they all come with risk. And the risk of a DNC is that we would scar your uterus. And you've already had 2. So having more increases the risk of scar tissue. And I should have said, I don't care. But I didn't. I took the medications. We went home. my mom flew up. We went to a dive bar like Friday night and had margaritas. And then we knew like the next day I would take the misoprostol. And this mm-hmm. time it was like 4 misoprostol in my vagina, not orally.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I was like, okay.
Because they didn't work. It didn't work the time you tried it before. So right. That feels like a lot.
Yeah. I was like, this woman means business.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And she, oh, here's the kicker. We want to know, as the hospital, like what happened. Because this was a double A perfect chef's kiss embryo. Like, what could possibly have gone wrong? So we're going to need you to collect everything you pass for examination.
Oh my God. No.
So here's a cup and some gloves. We'll see you on Monday because the office will be closed over the weekend, obviously. And here's a sheet of just like, just in case worst case scenario things happen, here's what you're looking for. Good luck. Godspeed. Yeah. So I start the process and I'm in the shower. You know, it's a beautiful day in Portland. My mom is in town. We're sitting in the backyard. I do the medicine and like 5 hours later, I'm in the shower and I pass a little clot and I think that I'm a superhero. I get out of the shower and I'm like, I just had a miscarriage, right? Yeah. Like I had no idea what. Because I haven't had a miscarriage. I had always had DNCs. And so mm-hmm. I think the one clot is like, whew, I did it.
Yeah. And I was in the right place. It wasn't embarrassing. It was like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I got out of the shower and walked on the deck like I should have won a medal for what I had done.
Yeah. Cheers, guys.
No. Yeah. And I have, like, the biggest, bulkiest pads that are just, like, one level less than a full-on adult diaper, mm-hmm. Which I probably should have been wearing. And then it just begins. And I can feel, like, every time I laugh, there's just, like, a clot of blood that I pass. Like, I can feel it happening. It's like it's hailing in my underwear, but it's just, like, clots of blood. And then, you know, Asher, I love him so much. He's so good to me. He's like, okay, let's go to the bathroom. We got to change your pad. Get what we can for the jar, right? Don't forget, we have to collect all of this. So
we have to do their work for them.
That's right, because God forbid I might scar my uterus.
Yeah.
It's like hours and hours of this. And at one point, it was so bad that I needed both Asher and my mom to walk with me to the bathroom. So we're like, I can just tell that I've passed so many clots that there's like no way that I can handle this, right? I'm like shaky and I'm nervous and it's gross. So they both come to the bathroom with me and they each have like a side of my pants and my underwear and they're pulling it down. And this huge clot wiggles down my pants onto the bathroom floor and just like splats like strawberry jelly. It just like falls on the bathroom floor. And my mom was like, I'm out. She leaves the bathroom. She just can't do it. She's just like, I can't. Nope. That's a line too far. So Asher is just like, oh my God. We just laugh. We just start laughing because what are you going to do? Like,
yeah.
And you have to get it because you have to keep it for the jar.
I imagine the cup is full at this point.
It like, is. It is. Yeah. Oh. Asher's like, could we have had some more gloves? Because this is not enough gloves. And so the day just continues. And they're, you know, they say if you bleed through a pad an hour, that's a lot. You need to, if you bleed through more than a pad an hour, that's a lot. And you need to go to the doctor. And I was bleeding through pads like every 15 minutes. So we called the hospital and I talked to the OB on call, and it turns out she was one of the badass doctors who saved my life during my ectopic pregnancy. And so I was like, this probably isn't the time, but you literally saved my life. Like, thank you so much. Like, several years ago, I would have died, and you saved my life. But also, like, I'm really heavily bleeding right now, and probably need to come in. And she's like, yeah, you need to come in.
So, can you do it again?
Yeah. Just, like, I might need you to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she was going home, so it wasn't going to be her.
Okay. But you got to talk to her and thank her, so that's good.
Totally so sweet. I mean, what a sweet moment, right? Yeah. And then I start having contractions, like full-on burning, horrible pain that I cannot do anything except bear down in my living room. So I'm like squatting, having these like really bizarre contractions, which in my head, I'm like, this cannot be happening. Like, I'm not having a baby. Why would I be having contractions? So we go to the ER. We wait for, I think, 6 hours again, because I'm fine, right? Like, I'm upright. I'm coherent. Like, my blood pressure's kind of thready because I don't have any blood in my body, but
right.
I don't have a fever. Nobody shot me. Like, so
yeah.
They were just like, you have to wait. And so then we finally get seen, and it's a resident, like a student. And he is just like, what do you want to do? Do you want to have a DNC? Do you want to just go home? And I was like, I don't really want to just go home. No. So I think what happened, so I start to have a DNC, and somehow my mom has like positioned herself between like me and the door. And so she's just like staring into my vagina at 3 a.m. Like, I think she's just like stuck, right? Because the room is small. Yeah. It's like my mom and my husband and this resident. And she's just like wide-eyed, like, what is happening? I'm sure she's like, I wish I hadn't flown to Portland. But
I've had better trips.
This has been kind of a big day for me. Yeah. So we have recently talked about this, and she's like, I'm fine. I'm fine. That was fine. I'm like, well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Sorry you had to see that. Even I didn't have to see that, you know?
Yeah.
So we have a DNC. So my placenta was not going to detach from my body. So it was just like stuck. And I don't know a whole lot about like later stages of pregnancy, but I think that's a very serious problem. So part of me thinks I probably didn't want this pregnancy to go on, because I think that could have been really catastrophic if I had had the baby.
Yeah.
And then I think like through this whole adventure, Asher and I have always talked about the universe and like, what is the universe telling us? And I think after this pregnancy, we were like, I think we know what the universe is telling us. Like, stop. Stop it. Shut it down. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So.
Or you've done your absolute best. Like, you've tried. You've tried.
Yeah. You did it. Yeah. You gave it the old college try.
Yeah.
It's not for you, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, I think I kept feeling like if I tempted fate and tried it again, it would kill me. And that was not going to be worth it to anybody. You know, that's not what Asher wanted. That's not obviously what I wanted. So I think we decided not to move forward with IVF, which so many mixed feelings go into that, because we had a freezer full of embryos that were healthy. But I had hit my wall. Like, I just couldn't physically imagine having another try at this. I didn't want more people in my body. I didn't want to be scared. I didn't want that feeling of like, oh my God, I'm pregnant again. What's going to go wrong this time? Like, I just couldn't mentally have that happen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I got pregnant again.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Some little embryo just wedged itself in my right fallopian tube again. Oh. But I knew that this was not gonna be a pregnancy. Like, the line was so faint on the pregnancy test, and I just knew, but I had to call the doctor and go get the blood tests, and it just kind of did this like roller coaster of levels for a while where it would just like not come down, but it wasn't an alarmingly high number, so I didn't need any medical intervention, and then it finally just leveled out on its own. But we got called into the fertility office, and Asher and I always joke that we felt like we were being called into the principal's office for this fifth pregnancy, because I think she was like, we can't do this again. Like, you can't have another ectopic pregnancy. Yeah. It is just not safe for you. So her idea was to take my other fallopian tube and just completely eliminate the transportation option. And then I wouldn't need to be on birth control for the rest of my life, which I really didn't want to do. And then Asher was like, well, why don't I just do it? Like, why don't I have a vasectomy?
Wow.
And she was like, what? Like, it hadn't even occurred to her that there was like another side of the fertility process that could be solved. So that was very kind of him.
Yes.
Very thoughtful of him. And he knows kind of the least he could do, right? but he knows that. He's like, I think I could do this.
He gets a couple days off work and an ice pack and you'll be okay.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So he did that. And then, you know, all the laws are changing in this country, and women are losing their rights. So before anything criminal happens, we decided to destroy our embryos. I don't really know what they do with them. But I didn't want to be on the hook for these 10 or 9 embryos. Like, I didn't want to, I was not going to carry them. So we just decided to let go of those embryos. And it all feels really good. It feels right.
Good. That's so... Because if it didn't, you know, you'd have to just, like, live in that place, and, like, there's not a lot you can do about that. You know?
Yeah.
I guess you can reverse a vasectomy or what, like, there's things you could do, but
yeah,
I'm happy that you feel that way. And yeah, like, was it hard for you to just say, and that's done now? Like, I know you've mentioned people have suggested an adoption to you. Like, that's not something that you were aware of. were you, because, like, I remember when we were both still living in Portland that you were sort of like, do we go down that route? Like, I remember you were in that place still. And
yeah.
I think you were going to go to a information night or something like that just to see.
Yeah.
What was that?
Ashley, great room. That's like such good memory.
I remember all your stuff, but I don't remember my stuff. Yeah.
I couldn't do it. We scheduled the adoption appointment, and it was so close to being like right after my horrific IVF miscarriage. It was too soon after that. And yeah. I couldn't, like, my whole yeah. body was like rejecting that idea. And, you know, after each pregnancy, I got this incredible anxiety, like crippling anxiety that made me want to just like hide in the basement. And that's not really my style typically. And so I hated it. It was so foreign to me and it was so uncomfortable. And I remember like after the IVF pregnancy, it was really bad. And the school psychologist said, she just like gave me this permission to feel that way. And she was like, Emily, every fiber of your being what knew you were pregnant. Like every hair follicle, every brain cell, like everything about your body knew you were pregnant. And so now it has to unknow that. And that takes time. Like it takes time for your body to come back from that. And that was such permission to just feel like crap and to understand that it really is a process to just heal through that. And I just feel like I tried to move too quickly after that miscarriage into the next thing. Like I tried to just like wrap up that miscarriage and go get a baby.
Yeah.
And that's not that didn't work for me.
Do you think that that after a miscarriage you go through like sort of a period of postpartum? That's like, and so it was like you rushing your body into another one and your body was like, no, not ready. Like I still have to process. And I wonder about that. I used to think that that's why you couldn't get pregnant when you were still breastfeeding or something like that. But then I've had friends that have debunked that myth and yeah. So.
Yeah, I do. I think of it as like an unraveling, like mm-hmm. your whole body's just prepared for this little creature to grow. And then it has to get this like message that that's not going to happen. So everything shifts gears and,
yeah.
And that's just the physical, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's not the mental anguish of it. That's not the emotional anguish of it. It's just the physical loss of it. And I still don't know today how you process each of those three, like the physical and the emotional and the mental. Like how do you unravel all of that? I don't know.
And they don't send you home with, you know, help for that. It's
they don't.
I remember on our way back when we had found out that there was no longer a heartbeat, I got Dan to go right to the grocery store and I got a bottle of wine and I was like, I don't want to feel this.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how else, like they don't send me home with medication to not feel like I have a dead baby inside my body.
Right.
And I'm like, I only know how I felt, but like, I was fixated on that. I was like, I think I just felt like maybe it's still alive, like whatever. And I felt like, nope, this bottle of wine is going to make sure that it's not. And like,
right.
But like all that leads to is a hangover at like 4:30 in the afternoon. And like, I don't recommend handling things that way, but I could not feel those feelings at that moment.
I needed to just.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, so I was in a high school, I was a counselor in a high school and I did the IVF miscarriage and, you know, I had gone to work that Friday. Everybody knew I was pregnant. They were on the IVF journey with me. I felt like I had to share it because I was going to be this like hormonal lunatic, right? and I needed them to know why if I was just sobbing in the middle of the school day. And so then I had to tell everybody what I was doing that weekend. And So I only took Monday off because why would I take any more than just like a 3-day weekend? But it's like,
my gosh, you Americans, I do not understand this. you deserve it.
Get back please. To work, Emily.
Yeah. Everything will collapse if I'm not there.
Right. No. False. And I walk into my office of counselors and the head counselor is like, she literally says to me, you look radiant. Like a weight's been lifted. And I just was like, I can think of 1 million other things that you could have said to me that showed like some kind of compassionate, like you could have checked on me, you could have hugged me, you could have said like, I can't even imagine what your weekend was like. You know, when you're ready, I would love to hear your experience.
Like, was she working on that all weekend?
Right.
Like, seriously, that is... Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had a friend at the school who I felt really close to. And he had known the adventure, the journey adventure. And he didn't ever talk to me about it. Like, he just couldn't talk to me, didn't check on me, didn't text me, didn't write me a note, didn't nothing. Like, he was just gone. And so I got very cold because I thought, if you don't want damage, Emily, like you don't want miscarriage, Emily, then you don't get fun, Emily. Like,
yeah,
you can't have just the good parts if we're friends.
Yeah.
And so he hated that, right? Because fun, Emily, can be pretty fun.
Oh, let me vouch for that.
But cold Emily can be very cold. And so I'm working on that in counseling, by the way. But yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So finally he was just like, I can't take anymore. Like, what's going on with you? So we talked and it was like the most cathartic conversation. Aww. I was just basically screaming at him in my office and he was taking it like a champ, but it just felt like it was so much more than just our friendship that was coming out. I was just like screaming at him about my miscarriage. But just having a sounding board of somebody who, like, you know, was forced to have the space to listen to me talk because he was stuck in my office with me. And so I don't think complimenting your friends on their physical appearance after a miscarriage is like a good move.
Or like ever.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah. That's I don't know.
Good point, Ashley.
I don't think that's ever, I do feel like it's lip service. I remember someone telling me I was glowing and I was like, no, I'm not. I have acne all over my chin. Like, my eyebrows are out of control growing together. Why are you telling me I'm glowing? That's bullshit. I'm waiting for the glow. I've been told this is going to happen.
Yeah.
I'll know.
My glow is for me. It is not for you.
Yeah. And I was probably just really mad. And that's why it looks a little more pink than usual. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. So thinking about like what helped me through all of that, just like people asking open-ended questions that aren't like yes, no questions. So just having a little bit of like wonder or like, you know, tell me about that, or I'm really sorry to hear that. You know, I'm here. I'm ready when you are to talk about it, or, you know, do you want to go get a drink? Do you want to go take a walk? Like, is there something we can do together that would help, you know, like just literally anything besides ignoring the problem or telling the person that they look fabulous?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think a lot of that is hard. I think it was hard for me until I experienced it myself to know the right thing to say and not that, I mean, not that it's always right in any situation or whatever, but just to have like some more empathy. And because especially when you're in that place and maybe you're still on the hormones or whatever, nothing is going to come across properly. Like, right. I don't feel like you're able to take compliments or take constructive criticism or anything. Like, it's just not, there's nothing to be said. And just knowing that is like, it's being able to say, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Or like, how are you doing? Like, right. When people have asked me how I'm doing kind of out of nowhere, sometimes I'm just like, wow, that's important, you know? Yeah. Like,
right.
Yeah. So,
or just,
and you know, like, when it's a genuine, how are you doing?
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just saying like, that sounds really hard. Yeah. Like, I have cried more with people who can stand in front of me and say, that sounds awful. And that's it, right? And then mm-hmm. you feel so seen and validated, and like there's this permission to say, like, it was awful. It yeah. was horrible. And I am not okay. And then asking, like, what's next? Like, you know, I'm so sorry that that happened. And what do we need to do next?
Mm-hmm.
And just like, okay, I think I need to go home next. Like, I yeah. think I'm going to be done for the next year and I don't want to talk about it. Or I think I need a week and then I think we should go on a trip somewhere. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever people need, but just like letting them drive the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say avoiding triggers, but there's just no way to do that.
No.
Because you never know what's going to get you. And like I was saying before, like, I'm, even though I am pregnant right now, I'm still triggered by pregnant people.
Right.
And like, you know, the parking spots for, with the little cartoon of the pregnant woman. And because there was so long that I just wanted to park there.
Yeah.
And like, that's, and it seems so stupid, but I just like, I just wanted that privilege,
yeah.
you know, with this group of women that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those of you listening at home who are wondering, did she collect all the material from the miscarriage?
Yeah, curious.
She did not.
Oh, my God.
I did not collect the right things, and so... we had no determination about what happened. The doctor called like a month later because she had sent some stuff to what is the like really well-known hospital in the north of our country? Doesn't matter. She had sent some stuff.
Mayo.
The Mayo Clinic. Thank yeah. you. She thought that I had a blighted ovum, which I don't really know what that means. I haven't really done a lot of research on it. I did not have a blighted ovum.
Okay.
And then she thought I had a, like, potentially severe blood disorder, so I needed to see a hematologist, which was terrifying. And he came into the meeting and slid across the floor in his chair, said, "My levels were of no concern, and do we need parking validation?" And so I was like, oh, yeah, I think we're done. I don't want to do yeah. this anymore.
Oh,
so
I got sent to an oncology clinic because my iron levels were way too high. And so someone thought that that could be what was preventing us from, I don't know. It was like fighting the baby from happening. And it was so scary to be in there with people who visibly were there for chemo and stuff like that. And
right.
The same thing happened. He was like, "Why are you here?"
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Like,
I was hoping to find that out too. And yeah, it was just like, I'm not concerned about anything. And then we chalked it up to, I had taken those like cold effects kind of pills, because I was trying to fight a cold, and there's like tons of iron in them. So
was that in Oregon?
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna have to go offline and talk about this doctor, because it sounds like probably the same one.
Oh no.
Maybe not, but that sounds okay. Like a similar conversation if he was still flippant with you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I think this is the podcast. This is just talking about our experiences. And I think maybe both of us can think about inviting some more people to come on and share their experiences with us.
Yes.
And more soon.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ashley.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Emily. And if you give yourself permission to be a jerk tonight, because it happened to me, I don't know. It wasn't directed at anyone. It was just like, my feelings are on the outside now.
That's good to know. So, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, thank you.